freaking out of.
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says?
No, he's not a Brennan.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Ah, we stink, man.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way!
Here we go again. Another Brock and Howdy podcast. Oh, Howdy just has been taking over the podcast. He doesn't actually have a name mention on it.
Welcome back to the Brock and Howdy podcast. Mike Salk joining you along with Kyle Brown extraordinaire.
Most common thing I heard in terms of reaction from friends and people I know about the podcast is like, wow, Howdy's really taken over. Like, he's talking a lot. How come he's talking so much? Is he going for, like, a name mention in it? Why is there so much Howdy in the podcast?
Because, like, Latimer, he finally got a seat at the table. He'd been waiting for his seat at the table.
We need a new table, a smaller table, one with fewer seats.
We need to have someone take a picture, by the way, of how we tape this, being in the old studio and everything else. Maybe we can tweet that out so you can see we're family. And doesn't this fill up the family love tank right here? Don't you leave every one of these?
Love tank?
And doesn't this feel...
I don't have a family love tank.
You said to me last
a
night...
A love tank?
And you texted me and said, you know...
Don't you put my text out in public. I know it's just a podcast and nobody listens, but that's a private text.
Okay, sorry.
How dare you?
Well, last night you said to me, this is really weird only seeing you once a week, right? It's really weird.
I don't care for it.
So, you know...
But I still see Howdy every day, which is a pain in everybody's rear
multiple
end.
Multiple times a day.
Right. He's in my office all day. It's awful.
All right. Sorry. My bad.
Yeah, that's not changed in my life. I still have way too much Howdy for my own liking. All right. Where are the Seahawks at, Brock? They're 5-2. A week ago, you're talking Seahawks, and you're looking through, you know, rankings, and you see them in the top five in the NFL of a bunch of rankings, at the very least top seven. And then I wouldn't say they got waxed by Baltimore. That's not fair. But at home, they got beat up physically. They couldn't make the plays when they needed to, and they end up losing. And so, you know, where do they fall to after that?
They've just been vulnerable at home, which is so weird. This has been a year of weirdness, not only because we're not on at 7 a.m. in the morning on Monday mornings, right, every single Monday and totally dissecting this and having our 50,000 takeaways, but just from a little bit from afar, it is just weird to watch a team whose identities are offense. Their identity is they better score 30 points, and if they score 30 points,
but they don't play that
they
way.
Could win.
They don't like the Cougs.
They don't play as if their identity is the offense.
Well, the head coach may not manage those situations
don't act as if their identity is their offense. They don't act like any other team I've ever – I mean, think of the teams we know just in our lifetime that have had truly, you know, offensive identities. The greatest show on turf, right? I mean, the Saints sort of when they went to the Super Bowl and
Peyton
soon after.
Rams.
The new version of the Rams, the Patriots in 07 and beyond. I mean, teams that have offensive identities generally play towards the strength of their offense. The Seahawks don't do that at all. They're punting on 4th-and-3 from midfield. They give up 4th-and-2 down near the goal line and give up a touchdown. I mean, and it's not just in this past game. It's really been all season long. They don't do the things that teams with offensive identities do.
No, the head coach still manages the game like he's a defensive first head coach.
But he's got a bad defense and a bad punter. And like all the things you're supposed to have.
Well,
when
and a kicker from 53 when at 4th-and-3, they didn't punt it. They actually tried to kick it
right.
4th-and-3.
Was that because their punter's been so bad this year?
I don't know.
Because they have so much faith in the kick. I mean, like, you start looking through the reasons why they do things, and it defies what the eyes are telling
you.
Well,
my eyes tell me this team is an offensive team that's going to go as far as Russell is going to take them, and we have said that for a long time, but I think that has been further hammered home more than ever this season. My eyes also tell me, and the stats tell me, Mike, this group has given up 6 yards of play defensively. And when you do that, you're going to be less in the bottom third of the league, if not the bottom five of the league in defense. That is what they are giving up. I've watched two dynamic players come into that building, Alvin Kamara and Lamar Jackson, and they are dynamic. And maybe this is clouded, and maybe this is an overreaction, because those two dudes are just about as elite gets at their position athletically and speed and quickness, and the Seahawks had no answer for either of them. Could not tackle them, couldn't handle their speed and athleticism. And again, that is just weird. And I couldn't have been the only one watching that game wondering, man, I would have loved to seen that 2013 defense against Lamar. Like, I would have just loved to have seen those dogs and that speed and that ferocity and all of that, because that's not there anymore. And I really hope the head coach doesn't believe it is. But in listening to Pete's comments, even on Monday, you know, with the guys, Paul and Danny, him saying, you know, our freaking young guys are going to get better over the next 5 weeks.
But if they get better, they'll become average.
Defensively.
Like, cool. I believe Pete. I think they will get better. And then they'll be average.
But if
because right now they're subpar.
But if they're young guys, Fance and DeMarco Jones and DK and Chris Carson, still a young guy, if they're young guys offensively, take another step, you're talking about, you know, winning this division, right? If those guys get better, right, we point to to me, you and I often have been aligned in this way. You and I point to the defensive guys. This is a defensive team, man. This is your defensive resources, your defense capital, draft picks and money and Ziggy Ansah, and you traded for Clowney, and you're paying good money defensively. If you're asking me whether or not Rasheem Green or Tedrick Thompson or Delano Hill or L.J. Collier in the next 4 or 5 weeks are going to take a significant step.
What would possibly lead somebody to say that was going to happen?
Pete would believe that.
Pete would tell you that.
I don't think Pete believes that about Tedrick Thompson. Let's be very clear.
Unchecked optimism is what would lead you to say something as ridiculous as that.
Pete even ripped Tedrick Thompson earlier this week, right? Yeah. For the over
another deep ball.
Getting beat again over the top. Like, that guy's not good. Yeah. I don't want to say what I was saying while I was watching the game because it's not fair. It's an ad hominem attack, and we're not about that here. But he's not a good football player. He does not belong in the football field. I know he's made a couple of picks this year. One was tremendous. I mean, just an incredible play that he made. Both of them, it should be pointed out, came off tipped balls that happened to come near him. He's not good at playing safety. He's a bad tackler. Yeah. He gets beat over the top. His ball skills, while in those two instances have been good, in general have not been. Like, that guy's just not – he can't be your safety. So if you can't get good safety play – and your defensive ends get exactly another week where they got a sack, but it was only because he fell down.
No, they touched Lamar Jackson on the ground.
That's right. That doesn't count.
He slipped and fall.
That's a technical sack. So it's
one
not a real sack,
sack in three games.
Yes.
Well,
that's
one,
it.
That's the sack.
The
it's
only
zero
sack
sacks in three games
is Lamar Jackson fell down on a wet field and you touched him. That's it.
And this team is 5-2. Right? I mean, that is what is crazy about that.
Yo, Russell's 5-2.
Yes.
Quarterback wins, man. We've been talking about quarterback wins forever and ever, and Russell Wilson is 5-2. And if Russell thinks he can get away with that lazy pass he threw to the sideline for a pick six, he can't. Sorry, Russ, your margin for error is zero. Yep. You're going to have to go back to what you were doing the last few weeks when you played perfectly. That's the first real legitimate mistake he's made this year. It was, I think, the worst throw I've ever seen him make.
Yeah.
I was there. I watched it. I was sitting sort of in the corner, so I had like the view right down that sideline from the other team's point of view. And just seeing it in the air, like, oh, that's definitely
unreal.
The second he threw it.
You watch it on TV, you got the same impression.
It looked like you ever watch NASCAR when
No.
All right. Well, when they blow an engine.
Still no.
And they're like, they're trying to give it gas and just nothing happens to the car. That's kind of what it looked like. It just didn't go anywhere. It looked like somebody trying to like run with a bad hamstring. Like, oh yeah, Russell threw it, but instead of putting any juice on it, instead of it looking like one of the balls Brock throws when we're all playing, it looked like something Howdy would throw. Like it was
because he thought Marcus Peters was nowhere around.
So
Marcus
just,
Peters
like,
baited
lobbed
him.
It over?
And by the way, you don't have a Seahawk defender that can make that play.
Yes, you do.
No.
False.
That would do what Marcus Peters did and bait the guy? Absolutely not.
I don't know whether they debated him, but I will guarantee you that every player on the Seahawks,
sure.
I'm up to and including Puna Ford, if the ball was thrown at that speed and they were where Marcus Peters was when the ball was thrown, Puna Ford makes that play and takes it to the house.
Yes, he does. Puna Ford doesn't drop back like he's covering the seam 10 or 12 yards. And at that point, Russell thinks, okay, there is nobody out there, and I can just, you know, get the ball to Jerron Brown. And Marcus Peters totally baited him and made the play of the game that changed it. And, yeah, big picture, Russell's going to have to play near flawless week in and week out. Against quality competition, he's going to have to play flawless. Against good competition, he's going to have to play great. Against, you know, average to below average competition, which they may see in Atlanta, especially if Matt Schaub is a quarterback, he doesn't have to play elite for this team to win. There's still enough balance there. But, you know, Pete was pretty emotional, the most animated he'd been this season on Monday with the guys, because he knows if they're going to win this division, and San Francisco's 6-0, the Rams have a bounce-back game, I don't think they're falling off the cliff, and if you're going to win this division, your young players, Mike, have to take a significant, and I mean significant, step forward. He believes they can. I have some real doubts. I have some real wonder of whether or not those guys we referenced earlier, who are not rookies, LJ Collier is not going to take a huge step this year. It's not going to happen, right? But those guys that are not rookies, that would be Delano, that would be Tedrick, that would continue to be, and I thought Trey played his best game, Trey Flowers. Yep. That would continue to be Trey Flowers. That would be Rasheem Green in year number two. That would be a lot of those young guys that have played enough ball. That's who he's speaking to when he was as animated as he was, in my opinion. It wasn't to anybody else, but those guys that you're going to have to take this step, or you know this will be solely and completely on Russell.
What'd you think of the game Ziggy Ansah had this weekend?
Ziggy was in it. What an injury
he had, huh? Yeah, he has a sore ankle that he might not be able to come back from.
How could
next
you tell he didn't play?
I got to be honest, bro. The 90s are still screwing me up. I don't even know who is on the field, right? So Titus knows better than I do. I'm like looking at these 90 numbers still. Is that LJ? Is that Rasheem?
It's confusing.
Is that Jaren? Is that Ziggy? Like I have, there's
you can tell Puna apart.
Yes, you can.
Puna's not a problem. You can tell which one is Puna.
And Al Woods, but he's in the 70s.
Yeah. He's in the 70s. Outside the 90s still get me.
Yeah.
Clowney, I can tell. He's been the only disruptive
Ziggy
force.
Didn't play. I'll clue you in. Ziggy didn't play this weekend. I know you could tell because he didn't do anything, which is very different from the games where he does play, because in those games he doesn't do anything.
Were you clowning me, by the way, Kyle?
Ziggy Ansah, I want to say this very clearly for the record. As of today, now this is subject to change. Ziggy Ansah might be a worse investment than Eddie Lacy or anyone else we've seen. Luke Jokel, Eddie Lacy, Ziggy Ansah. Now, Bradley Sowell wasn't an investment.
No.
That's just a guy.
That's a scrap heap guy.
Same with that Gigantor that they brought in that same
Jamarcus
year.
Jamarcus Webb.
Right. I mean, those guys are just, you know, they're off the scrap heap. These are people that you brought in for significant.
Luke Jokel made $8 million and was horrendous.
Was he better?
He just shut it down on the team.
Was he better or worse than Ziggy?
He was so bad, he said, I'm going to have surgery.
Better or worse than Ziggy? I think he was better. I would argue that he was better than Ziggy Ansah. I think Eddie Lacy is the only true comp because he was sort of in and out of the lineup. He'd go in and you'd be like, God, that was terrible. Why does it look so bad? And like, I believed that Eddie was going to be good. So I kept hoping and waiting. And like, no, this week, it's just this. It's just he didn't get the blocking or this went wrong. And Eddie's going to be okay.
He's a better downhill runner. He's not a zone read runner.
Exactly.
Brock, how does it feel now to be Mike with Ziggy Ansah? Because now you understand what Mike
Salk
going
has
through.
Done this with running backs with Alex Collins.
I know. Well, I was right about
Rashad
that.
Rashad Penny. It's just they're not using him the right way. They got to give him the right kind of
They're
run.
Not using those guys the
How'd
right
Rashad
way.
How play?
I thought he had a really good game. I thought Rashad was great.
Was he active or inactive?
He was. He was in there for two plays. He didn't get a handoff. But on those plays, Brock, he made a difference. Let me tell you. He was a difference maker.
It just didn't work out. It,
no.
You know,
it didn't, I guess.
I wish he played more. It just didn't happen.
Why? Why do you wish he played more?
One of Pete's great regrets. On his deathbed, he will be like, oh, we didn't use Rashad against Baltimore.
Kyle, were you clowning me, by the way, on my clowny little addition? My tweet post-game that I said it's a good thing Clowney's on this. Can you imagine this defense without Jadeveon Clowney? You may want to pay him.
Oh,
now, you
Brock.
Can't because he'd been franchised, so you can't pay him until after the year. So you can't pay him, I think, technically until after the season ends. Were you clowning me on my clowny
tape? I was not. That is a testament to how bad and how much this defense has underperformed.
How many sacks he had?
Jadeveon Clowney has one sack this year. Now, he's been impactful. He's got a pick six. But he's the guy now with one sack that we're saying, oh, imagine this defense without him.
Well, they've only had one sack in 3 weeks. I mean, if you have one sack, you're basically the team leader.
If they played without him, they'd have one less sack. That's it.
That's not true, though.
Well, they
played, maybe. If they played without him, they might be giving up a lot more points, man. He's played really well in run defense. He's making plays, tackles for losses.
He's the only guy on that D-line that has flashed this year. Right? Consistently, he's the only guy that I recognize in the 90s. He's the only guy that you see affecting the play, affecting run games, moving the pocket. The rest of that D-line is just been a mess.
How is that possible? You're a football expert, Brock, and I demand some expertise out of you. How is it possible that a team that a few years ago understood that they needed Chris Clemons, Michael Bennett, Cliff Avril, and more just to rush the passer, right? Plus McDonald and all the guys that they brought in because they could rush the passer from so many different angles.
Yep.
How is it possible that that same group of people and talent evaluators and coaches have put together a group that can't come near the quarterback?
And by the way, that same group is watching another team in your division with one of your former coaches employ that. Now, the 49ers have had the tremendous benefit of doing what?
Yeah, picking at the top of the draft.
Top five, and there's a top 10, and there's a top five. So they've been able to load up on those freak shows with all perennial top 10 picks.
But
that is the way you play. In fact, Jeff Hafley, the defensive coordinator, I know you know Jeff well, D coordinator at Ohio State.
Of course.
Had been in San Francisco the last 2 or 3 years. And he and I had a great conversation talking about their scheme. And guess what Ohio State does, Salk? They play 13 D linemen. They've got Chase Young, who could be the first or second or third pick in this draft, who's an absolute monster, unblockable D end, one of 13 that they rotate through. And he's like, man, it gets really easy when you can just line up and your four beat their five. The game gets really easy. You get real smart. It's exactly what the Seahawks were in 2012, 13, 14, 15. It's what the Niners are this year. And unfortunately, playing that scheme, Mike, it's what you're trying to do. And then even on top of it, you're playing with your base defense. So you've got KJ and Kendricks on the field that don't have superior speed to cover a lot of ground. So, yeah, it's been problematic defensively.
All right, well, then let me run through a little exercise with you. And I got about 7 or 8 guys, maybe more, that I just kind of want to get a check on where they're play on how they're playing so
far. Stock up, stock down?
No, just sort of tell me how these guys are playing. I've even got some music for you.
Whoa.
I know. I surprised you.
Dude, you've come ready with this podcast.
What do you think, I mess around?
Family love tank time. I love it.
Please stop calling it that. I don't like it. It makes me uncomfortable.
Why? It's like a cult.
No. Family love tank.
Yeah, you follow
everyone
the tank.
Head to the family love tank for our nightly ritual.
What do we do in the love
tank? It sounds like something you see when you go like too high up and on DirecTV.
It's a gas tank.
Like once you get past the movie channels.
It's a gas tank. And you know what?
Cinemax?
No, it's well past Cinemax. You get up past into the 600s and above, howdy.
Oh.
It's a bad scene.
Do you know
up there.
That I don't ever like my gas tank below a quarter tank?
Of course.
I got to fill that tank up. That's what it is.
You're crazy.
Don't get crazy on me. It's
all right, you ready?
Yes.
Here are a bunch of guys. I just want to hear how they're playing, not just in the past game, but like so far this year.
Okay.
And some of it will there'll be some recency to it. Tedrick Thompson.
Tedrick's playing really poorly.
Unconscionably bad.
Yeah.
Not an NFL player.
I thought Rondae Barber over last weekend defined that big play really well. Like that's just a can't happen. And we've had a number of those this year. It is the one thing that Pete will judge and judge harshly and has.
In public.
Yes, because that is the number one principle of your scheme. And when you run 4-5-5, you better then err on the side of caution and constantly and consistently be deeper than the deepest.
DK Metcalf.
He has exceeded expectations. He had a clunker over the weekend. He had his worst game. And not just the fumble at the end. He couldn't win.
He drops a lot of
He does. He's not
that
a
hit his hands and are not.
He is very rarely. Do you say, wow, that looked easy, right? Everything at times feels a bit forced. Catching it, some of the routes, he is unbelievably big and physical and fast. And I think where they drafted him in the belief the QB has in him, he's exceeded my expectations. So I think he's doing just fine, but he better pull a Russell Wilson. And that is forget what lies behind and flush that game and flush that play and flush that bad moment. And move on. And you know what? He's going to be playing across from Julio Jones, not, you know, defensively, right, but on the sidelines. And that's his idol. You know, that's the guy that he's looked up to his entire life that he thinks is one of the greatest in Julio.
What is Julio going to do to this defense?
Well, Matt Schaub throwing softballs up there?
I mean,
hopefully it's Schaubie playing and not Matt Ryan.
I don't care who's throwing him the ball. What is Julio
Matt
Jones
going
to
run
right
past Tedrick Thompson. That's what he's going to do.
Probably true. I got to tell you just quickly on DK. I was so disappointed that he fumbled that ball. I've been kind of talking about it all week, and I know when you see the end score of this game, it's 30-16, and the Seahawks got trounced. But when he fumbled the ball, they're down 10, right?
Yep.
4 minutes left. That's a Russell Wilson moment, right?
You actually had all three timeouts.
Some miracle of science. You had all three timeouts.
Yep.
Russell goes down the field, scores maybe even before the 2-minute warning, or close to it.
Correct.
You kick off. In the NFL, even when you're getting trounced, somehow it seems like you always get the ball back.
It can be a one-score game.
And now you just need a field goal to go down the field with a minute left and no timeouts. Russell does that in his sleep.
Yep.
So, I know the fumbles happen, it's fine, like whatever, and maybe they wouldn't have won either way. But it just struck me as, remember last year when Russell fumbled against Denver?
Yes.
Right at the end, like 2 minute drill, like, okay. And then he just fumbled the snap. You're like,
yep.
Oh, well, I guess we never get a chance.
Yep.
Same thing, only it wasn't Russell who fumbled. Like, I just felt deprived of seeing what the Wizard had in store. What a huge bummer. Tyler Lockett.
Phenomenal.
God, he's been good.
Those balls look like Russ is just throwing them away.
The last one, he had to be. I know that the one in, when he
the
was running to his left, yes.
Baltimore?
He was just throwing that away. Really?
But why, if you were throwing it away, why put it there?
I don't know.
On but the ground in the end zone?
I thought he was just throwing it away.
Yeah, his connection with Russell, like Doug we always thought was the most special, right? That he could just throw it to any space and Doug was going to come out of nowhere and just seemingly somehow, some way contort his body, make the catch, huge catch radius. I think Tyler has exceeded that this season, which is some of the most incredible plays. When they say that those two are on the same page, it's more than that. It is truly unique.
He has 40 receptions on the year. I don't know whether he'll get to 100. That seems at this point maybe to be a little unlikely, but 85-90 is probably well within the range of what could be expected, which would be a tremendous year in this offense given how little they throw the ball. All right, how about your boy Jamarco Jones?
JJ the Jet Plane?
Is he going to keep his job this week?
Talking Pro Bowl, baby.
Does he keep his job?
He should. Yeah, he had one whiff.
Fluke was tweeting.
Fluke
was better put some speck on his name.
I think the Warrior is best suited if he's got to come in or maybe in certain matchups. And maybe put the Warrior as your jumbo tight end. Don't give me Joey Hunt.
Whoa. Okay, stop the music. What's going on?
Double rainbow all the way.
Come on, man.
You want to get a big heavy on
stop
the field.
That.
What? Put him at tight end?
No.
You put George Fant out there tight end.
Fant's dwarfed by...
Put Fluke at tight end in some little jumbo packages. Jamarco's played well.
Marquise Blair.
He's got to start. Here on out, period, end of story. Start him.
Every game.
He's going to make some boneheaded plays. He's going to bust some assignments. You know who else did? Earl Thomas when he was a rookie did. All right? This defense has to have his stinger. I was a little disappointed. He had a chance actually on Lamar Jackson. It was very reminiscent of Dak Prescott. On Dak Prescott's third down QB draw. Remember that down in Dallas?
Yes, I do.
Through McDougald, and Bobby.
Remember.
Yep. Well, Lamar, very similar. Very similar on Lamar Jackson's little third and 15. Third and 15. Wow. And Marquise has a chance. Lamar was cutting. He has a chance to unload. And he closed his eyes and he dove at his feet and he broke that tackle and he got to 4th and 1.5.
That guy's good, by the way.
Lamar?
Yeah. You lied to me. I'm mad at you.
What?
I loved Lamar in college. I was like, this guy's going to be a great pro.
Oh,
and you,
I don't know about
and
that.
You,
I
and
don't
you
know
talked
you
me out of it because of one thing. You told me, well, I know you like accuracy and he doesn't have it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not true. He's perfectly accurate.
Eh.
Don't and me.
Eh. I'm going to give you an...
He's perfectly
not,
accurate.
He's not perfectly accurate.
He's perfectly accurate to me. He's
under 50% passer in three
accurate.
Games.
Well, I watched this game last week. He threw the ball on the money, and his receivers dropped everything in near their hands.
Why? Because they're like, oh, this one's on the money, actually.
Stop it. That is ridiculous. Get out of here.
Oh, actually, this one didn't hit me on my shoestrings. This one hit me in my chest.
Stop it.
That absolutely plays a role. He's not innately accurate, but he is innately fast.
Man, he's good. Jerron Brown.
He can't play.
Here's the matchup I want to see.
He can't play.
What happens if Jerron Brown runs deep and Tedrick Thompson's trying to cover him? Does the world explode?
Ball falls. Ball hits the ground. That's what happens.
Jerron Brown runs right past Tedrick Thompson, and the ball hits him in the hands. He drops.
Yeah, the ball hits the ground.
First,
that's how that plays.
Go back and watch the first series of the game. He runs a crackback block, and he falls on his face. He doesn't block anybody.
That's better than the penalties he usually gets.
He stayed out of the way.
Exactly.
You know what? And you know what's funny is if it was an experienced receiver on that interception, an experienced receiver who understands that route and realizes I'm running a one-yard smoke route right now. That's my route. And I'm running this route to create this huge separation and put that corner in a bind. And when the corner went and bluffed, a veteran receiver, honestly, would see Russell make that throw, would look out of the corner of his eye, and would collision that ball. He would go and make a collision. I'm not putting this on Jerron Brown. DK Metcalf and Malik Turner and the rest of them would have done the same thing. But a veteran receiver on that route has an understanding of the concept.
He can save his quarterback.
Can absolutely save his quarterback and go collision that, if not knock it down, for sure make the tackle. Jerron Brown was just standing out there like, oh, bye. Oh, interception. See ya. Because he just doesn't have a feel for the game at all.
No, he does not.
You know
who
he does
doesn't
not.
Like him is Bruce Arians. You remember what Bruce Arians used to say about
G. Scott.
Him? He did not like him.
Well, no. He just doesn't have a sense for the game. And at this point of your career, like, why is John Ursu? I'd say the same thing. It sickens me that John Ursu is inactive week after week in this season. Russell will make him good.
Well, maybe.
Russell will give him a chance.
Maybe there's a reason for it. Like, I'm starting to worry that there's a very good reason Ursu is not active. No. All right, last one, but it's going to be a group of three players that I'm going to put together. And I don't want to do this, but I'm going to do it. All three linebackers. Mm. Brock.
Not playing the expectation at all. Not playing. I would have bought stock in Michael Kendricks.
All right, are we done?
Come on.
Are we done?
Come on, man. That's not right.
What, dude?
That's not right.
I would have bought stock in him.
Right. The guy's going to prison.
Did you know something ahead of time to tell you what was going to happen?
Well, we did know ahead of time, supposedly, was that Michael Kendricks was going to be used in a whole new way this year, and he was going to rush the passer.
He
hadn't
done
be like
squat, man.
Guy.
That guy just missed his tackles.
This whole thing about base defense.
KJ is like a day late and a dollar short on every ball down the field.
This whole thing
and
about
I'm waiting
base
for
defense.
Bobby's first play of the year.
This whole thing about base defense, and like we're going to do something, and I love the effort. I do. I love the creativity, the ingenuity, the boldness to say the rest of this league – okay, the rest of this league can play nickel and dime and all of this. We are going to get back to basics and play base defense. It's not working.
No, it's not.
No.
Well, maybe it
but
is.
Their option is to put more Nico Thorpes on the field.
Jamar Taylor. I mean, like, you know, if those guys are off, maybe it just gets worse. I saw Jamar Taylor in there. He got smoked. I mean, so it's not like they play better when they go nickel.
Yeah.
All right. One of the interesting things about doing the show here in this room instead of in the regular
this
studio,
podcast.
Yeah, this podcast, is that this computer that I sit at has the strangest headlines that pop up on it. So last week it brought me to the guy,
that Antarctic
the
guy
who was swimming in the Antarctic.
Oh, yeah.
This week I've got this.
Well, some
one.
Things don't change, Kyle. See, I got nothing in front of me. I'm trying to engage.
Let me read this
to
you.
I try to listen to everything Salk says.
What?
Death Valley's Park Service wants them gone. But are wild donkeys really the enemy? What?
Is that next?
Tell me you wouldn't click on that headline. Death Valley's Park Service wants them gone. But are the wild donkeys really the enemy? These burros may actually benefit more than they harm. Who would have ever thought? Who would have ever guessed? All right, somehow that'll lead into our Husky talk here in just a sec. All right, well, we spent some time talking about a Seahawks defense that is winning despite struggling, I think is the best way you would call it. Maybe we're being unfair. By the way, I mean, they gave up, what, two touchdowns in that game and a field goal? I mean, they gave up 16 points other than the 14 that the offense gave up. I mean, there were a bunch of third downs, and Lamar Jackson beat them. But I think we're being maybe a little unfair, just that it's just sort of week after week of like...
Between those last segments, we just did 27 minutes. Was that on a 5-2 team?
I know. I know, but they're very frustrating right now.
You're not taking the ball away. You're not affecting the quarterback. You're giving up 6 yards a play. If Baltimore, the only reason.
But they got Russell Wilson. And
they're
going
to go beat
awesome.
Atlanta. They're going to go to 6-2. Yep. And like, let's roll.
Yeah. It's true. I know. It's really. You're right. You are right about that.
It's a confounding team.
They are a little confounding. Yes. I still think they're pretty good, but their defense, like when you watch the Patriots on Monday night just go wax teams, right? Like the Jets, and then you
or
watch
the 49ers at 6-0 right, or the Rams who
the Niners didn't exactly do that. I mean 9-0 over Washington wasn't exactly something a sight to behold. But look, I think it's fair to still have some of these questions about the Seahawks, but I think there's also a good chance Pete Carroll finds a way to kind of get them going in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
The other coach, Pete, in town, I think is suffering from some of the same fate. And I heard Danny and Paul talking about this. It kind of got me thinking about it. Of just both guys, both Pete Carroll and Coach Peterson, seem to be coaching as if they have earlier versions of their teams.
Mm-hmm.
That they are not coaching to the teams they have. They're coaching to the teams they want and the teams that they've had in the past. Right, Pete, we saw it this past weekend, not going for it on fourth down, playing the defensive game despite the fact that he's got Russell Wilson in a defense that's giving it up right now. And on the other side, or the other team, you've got Chris Peterson, who has, I mean, his best asset is what? Jacob Eason. That is his best asset. His defense is not very good. I was at the game. Mm-hmm. I had a great time, by the way, at the game.
That's
awesome.
First time you took your family, right?
Yes, I'd been to a few games.
There was some misunderstanding out there when you tweeted this is your first Husky game.
I said it was their first. I said it was their first.
This explains so much.
Yeah. If you're a decade, you go to Husky game.
Right. I've been to many Husky games. And seen them win. Like, I've been to some good Husky games.
You've been on the road. We went to NSC a bunch of
years ago. Husky games on the road. Yep. I've seen Husky games at home.
You were at their playoff game in Atlanta?
I was. I saw them lose in the
Peach Bowl. So,
yeah, I mean, this
I've never been to a Husky game.
Been to many Husky games, but my 7-year-old and 5-year-old, this was the first games for them.
Cecily, where you been?
Cecily almost made it to the end.
And you got to sit under the cover, right?
We sure did. Nice. Were you crazy? I was sitting outside in the cold and the rain, watch some team.
So you all bundled up there and you watched them, and you felt like watching that game, they were too conservative?
I felt like their defense is not good enough for them to play the style of football that they play. Howdy's got this right. Like, why does Jacob Eason come off the field sometimes? That is your weapon, if that is your asset, why don't you use it? It's confounding to watch them.
Yeah, I think a couple different conversations here, and you can call me Husky Honk Homer or whatever you want to do.
I will definitely do that in less than 5 minutes.
Yeah, and I'm sure you will. And you're going to get
won't
me,
take much.
And I'm sure you're going to get me fired
it
up.
It won't take much to do that either.
Much like those donkeys, the folks down in the Palm Desert fired up about the donkeys.
Yeah, it depends. You can call them by a number of names. They are known variously as donkeys, African wild ass, or even Equus africanus, asinus.
Genus species.
But they're wild down there.
Yeah, they're the largest animals in the park. Yeah.
So it is to what it is this line that you always walk, right? That we want these teams. One of the biggest arguments, Salk, you ever got with me on air in this old studio was about what kind of identity do you want this team to be? Like the next head coach is you want somebody, and this is, I think, was with the Seahawks or something, right? After Holmgren got fired. And so what do you want them to be? And I was like, I just want them to win, to be adaptable. You know, and you got all red faced at me. And I think since then, we have been on this, like, what's your identity? What's your philosophy? How is your team built? And Chris Peterson's going to say, this is the way we play football, man. It's balanced. It's sound football. We run the ball. We play great defense. We play to the 72,000 at home in the stadium. And the recipe's been pretty good.
That's the way you want to play. That's the way you want to play. I totally get that. I get that that's the way you want to build
and
your team.
And it's the way, by the way, that Pete Carroll wants to play.
I totally understand that in both cases. But in Pete Carroll's case, they have failed to draft and acquire the right talent on defense to allow them to play that style of game. In Chris Peterson's case, their defense is either so young or maybe they don't have the talent. I don't know. We'll find out. But they're so
it's
young.
It's a mix of both.
You have, what, 9 new starters on their defense compared to last year that you don't have that.
Yes.
And you do have Jacob Eason, and you do have Russell Wilson, and we'll stick with Jacob Eason for now. Either use him or don't. And I'll come back to the argument we had a couple of weeks ago. Either use him or bench him. Either let him play the game that he was brought here to play and let him wing the ball all over the field because that's what he's good at, or sit the guy on the bench and start playing it for next year.
Well, that's a Mark Lowe being mad at him being traded kind of comparison. That makes no sense whatsoever. You have now 4 games to win with Jacob Eason. That's all you got with him. He's going to go to the league. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
And I don't see any reason to have him in the game.
So you absolutely do all you can to win. You have to solidify a recruiting class that's lost one kid that's decommitted.
Two kids.
Another local kid went down to Stanford. So you absolutely have to win these games to keep the trajectory of your arrow pointing north. And you're not playing Jacob Sermon or Dylan Morris. So Jacob Eason is your guy. Now, if you want to stand on the table and say, don't ever take him off the field, you can do that, and I will be right there with you.
Hold on. I don't mean to keep belaboring this point, and I know it's annoying to a lot of people, but let me just ask quickly. If those two guys, Morris and Sermon, are so bad that you won't even like consider playing them.
They're not so bad. The they don't give you the best chance to win.
No, I know that. Who's going to be your quarterback next year?
One of those two. There's a freshman coming in to compete. So, yeah, between now and next August.
So, but your season's lost this year.
Season is not lost in college football.
Sure it is.
No, it is not.
But you're not playing for a conference title.
You're not playing for a conference title.
Okay.
You know how you lose a season? You lose 10 4-star recruits. If you want to lose a season.
You know, you told me a lot about all the recruits that they got a few years ago when they went to the Peach Bowl and all that, and it was supposed to bring in all this great recruiting, and it was going to set them up for the future. Mm-hmm. Aren't those the guys that are playing now?
You mean the guys that played in the Rose Bowl last year, too?
No, the guys that are playing now.
Those guys were already there
when they went to the Peach Bowl. The guys that are playing now, aren't these the guys that are here because of all of the heights that you climbed?
18 and 19 years old, they're freshmen.
Latuli Gasanoa, name I have to know because we talked about him ad nauseum when he was a high school senior.
Sure, and he's a freshman and a redshirt freshman, and they're paying, taking their lumps. Absolutely. And to your point earlier, whether is it their youth or they're not good enough, it's both. And defensively, at their linebacker position, they're not good enough. Not even close. So I would say the scheme that you're trying to employ, even more than just like the conservative attitude, it is if you're going to employ this scheme, you got to have linebackers. Ben Burkervin would have had 24 tackles against the Ducks. He would have done that. I feel confidently. He would have had 20 tackles in that game. He erased a lot of mistakes. And he would have had 24 tackles because Greg Gaines eats up a couple blocks. Vita Vea ate up a lot of blocks. And, you know, those guys were NFL dudes. And they don't have NFL dudes in their front seven. Or they are freshmen and redshirt freshmen and are not at that level. And they're playing a scheme that is, hey, go ahead and try to run it on us. Okay, well, you're going to let us run? Okay, we're going to run, and then we're going to run, and we're going to run. And Cal ran, and Oregon ran, and they went and ran right down your throat Stanford in your stadium. Ran. And Stanford ran, and you know what? Utah.
What do you think Utah's going to do in 2 weeks?
Utah, and guess who's going to be on that call? And guess who's going to be circling that box? And guess who's going to be talking about a lot of these issues? Yours truly will be on that call. And they got probably the best running back in the league. Now, they don't have a great O-line, but they got a great running back and a great QB when healthy that can run.
And they have a system and an identity that makes sense for the personnel that
they've recruited to it and never wavered from
it. Correct. Now, on the flip side, you're right about Eason coming off the field. You're right about him in a Wildcat. And to have a fourth-string tailback running your short yardage plays in critical moments, that, too, is one that just got to stop. I'm going to put a Brent Musburger, stop the hype on the Wildcat.
Please it's do. Ridiculous.
Myles Gaskin was really good at it. He had that innate feel. Remember last segment we were
what
talking?
Was the kid they had doing it this week? Anthony Pleasant? Who's that kid?
Kamari Pleasant. Yeah, he's it's a four-string tailback.
He's your four-string running back running Wildcat.
Well, to be fair, in the game, he was their second-string tailback.
Correct.
Because the other guys were
but
hurt.
But on the depth chart.
And you knew that going into the game, that there would be no Newton, that there would be no Sean McGrew. So you know what? We're not going to put this kid in that position.
No. And I'm shocked, by the way, that Sean McGrew can't stay healthy. That's really surprising.
5'6".
Really? By the way, I really like him when he plays.
I thought that guy was made for the
pass. But I'm really surprised that he's had trouble
remember
staying on the field.
Remember his highlight reel?
Oh, I sure do.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
It's one of the few that we watched.
Oh, I know.
6:30 a.m. We were bouncing around the sports bar. This guy's a baller.
We thought it was his Pop Warner highlight film because he was like 4'6" at the time.
Tackle this dude.
He's a good little player. But, yeah. I mean, not a surprise that he's going to get beat up a little bit.
You've referenced earlier on, and I thought it was a great point.
Darn right.
They should have known coming into the season exactly what they had.
Right.
They knew they had Jacob Eason. They knew they had an experienced offensive line. They knew they had a talented and experienced running back. Those are the assets you were working with. You knew you were light on defense. You knew that.
Mm-hmm.
So why in the world are we here 8 weeks into the season and you haven't played to what roster you have? I understand you want to play a certain way, to your point. But you have to know coming into the season what you have.
It's about recruiting for next year, Howdy.
Didn't you like three quarters of that game? Didn't you like the offensive identity?
Yeah, the offense was great for three quarters, minus the red zone. Their Wildcat stuff, yes.
Yeah, the red zone, they actually were creative, scored some touchdowns.
No, they ran another option in the red zone. It just happened to work this time.
Against the number one red zone team in the country. That's a great play.
Another option.
Yeah, but you can't rip it when it works.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
I can because it hasn't worked like 10 times.
It's an amazing play.
It was a complete shock.
Serious stones on 4th and 1 to call a speed option with
Jacob Eason. I didn't like anything about that play at all. It just happened. It was such a bad call. It worked.
I don't like that.
Well, nobody liked that.
They become a four-game season. And between Utah and Oregon State and Washington State and Colorado, those are four winnable games.
Good. Then what do they need to do in those games to win them?
They need to have a terrible offensive performance one time so they can move on from Musham to be done with this.
Would you stop talking? Brock, what do the Huskies need to do to win those four
Jacob
games?
Has to play at the level he played against Oregon. He played his best game. Jacob was phenomenal. And scouts aren't going to – they'll like that BYU tape, but BYU is not very good, and they're slow on defense. They're going to put that Oregon tape on, and that's an Oregon defense. It's one of the best in the country that had given up 25 points in 5 games. It was a number one red zone defense. And they're going to put that tape on and go, man – this kid was on it.
They hadn't
back
allowed a
shoulders.
Touchdown since week 1.
Correct.
That stat was unbelievable.
Yes, his little RPO, little hitch route to Puka Nacua between three guys was amazing. His back shoulder to Hunter Bryant was phenomenal. He's throwing to true freshmen in moments and trusting Puka Nacua and trusting Spiker on 3rd and 15. Like he was big time. So if they're going to win, Jacob has to play to that level. Yeah. Kind of like the other quarterback in this town. They can't get away with him playing good. He's going to have to play great to make up for some of the deficiencies they have defensively.
That's like the best name if you're going to be a skill position guy in football, right? You want to be named Spiker.
Spiker.
Like, that's the name you're looking for. Well, we'll see, man. I still think I'd throw in one of the other two kids and start planning for next year. But what do I know? Apparently, I don't know anything. I think we've proven that over the course of the last 10 years. It was a really cool environment, by the way. It was great to be down there and just walk around the tailgates and all of that.
You know,
it's a really cool vibe.
And
telling the kids, because before the game, you know, we got pomp and circumstance and all that, and they got everyone's in the tunnel about ready to come out. And I turned to my kids, and you'll like this. I said, Brock will tell you that this was the highlight of his life, that his very favorite moment
sporting
in life, in sports, obviously, was waiting in the tunnel about to run out into the field at Husky Stadium.
Try to give me some goosebumps.
I'm trying.
Lori Malloy barking in that tunnel. The gates locked. The visitors back in the day having to sit in front of the gates as the smoke's coming, as the sirens going, as lawyers barking. And it's just echoing down that tunnel. Did I like that, Cecily? You better believe I like that.
So what an awkward thing on Monday. I mean, just some of the irony of what I ran into, Brock, is pretty incredible. So I was at the station here on Monday night. You were here. Kyle was here. There were a ton of volunteers from the station. All came out to support the Team Up Washington event, which we held here at in our studios, which was awesome. There were, 85, 90 coaches, almost 100 coaches from around the state.
All over the
People
state.
Came from as far as Forks. They came from as far as
Friday
Moses
Harbor.
Lake, Friday Harbor. I mean, it's really incredible. Ho River. I mean, like, it was.
Been to the Ho?
I had not yet, talked to the guy from there. He was telling me that they're going to get Wi-Fi in like 2 or 3 years.
Yes.
Oh my God. So yeah, I mean, it was a really cool experience.
Forks got 5 inches of rain yesterday, by the way, in one day.
Oh my God.
5 inches.
So this is the Team Up Washington event. This is the combination of coaching boys into men, which we've talked a lot about on this show and on the station, and Athletes as Leaders, which is the same program for girls sports teams. I sat in, watched the whole. It was so amazing.
Blown away.
There were
goosebumps moments.
Yeah, really. And there were a bunch of coaches there who were sort of directed to be there, I think, by their school district. They hadn't like chosen to be there. And you could just see in some of the body language change by the end, like, I don't really want to do this. Then by the end, it's like they're all in and like
they're
bought
approaching
into
the speakers afterwards.
Yes.
Thank you so much. What you just said had such an impact.
Yeah.
This really clicked for me listening to you, and this resonated.
It was
really cool.
It really was very cool and very empowering. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, something that we've gotten to watch go from being this very small program here in Washington to really growing throughout the region, and how many schools and how many districts are like getting to be invested in this idea of training for, look, we do all kinds of training for kids in school, right? Math and reading and science and English and all of it. But leadership development and morality and some of this stuff is just not taught as much. And teaching it by starting with athletes, the leaders naturally often in school, and allowing it to filter out, teaching about gender equity, teaching them about dating violence, teaching them about respect for women, teaching them about domestic violence, all of this through a really proven program. It's phenomenal to watch. And if it's something you want your coach or your team or your kids' teams to get involved in, text coach to 710-710. Text coach to 710-710 for more information on it. But literally, while I'm watching this presentation last night, I flipped through my Twitter during a break, and what do I see? This story out of Houston about Brandon Taubman and the Astros. He's the assistant GM. By now, you've probably heard, and I know it's Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday by the time you're listening to this. And he's out there screaming at female reporters about how happy he is that his team had acquired Roberto Osuna. Now, if you don't remember the Osuna story, by now I'm sure you've heard all about it. It was delicious justice on Saturday, wasn't it? Watching Osuna give up the game and then Chapman give up the game. Two domestic abusers in back-to-back half innings, both giving up two runs to screw up their teams. I mean, it was wonderful to watch two guys that you really wish weren't allowed to play, but you understand these are the rules. Okay, fine. If you're the Astros, do I support going after Osuna? You know how I feel about these things. I think those guys are dirty pool, but as long as they're available to be on your team, if they're not on yours, they're going to be on somebody else's. So I generally think the league should hold more responsibility than the teams.
Mm-hmm.
But you suffer it in silence, if that makes any sense, right? Like, Yeah, we got him. We don't need to be proud of it.
For those that don't know, he had been suspended for some time.
Yeah.
Like almost, a season?
Wasn't it 50 games or so?
It was a huge chunk of games that he had been suspended with, and he was with the Blue Jays at the time. And then the Astros acquire him because they need a closer, right? They have to have that kind of juice at the back end of their bullpen, amazing starting pitching, and he does come in and he gives it up. Now, you understand the Astros are vehemently denying this story, and they put out their statement saying that this was solely about him blowing the game and want to support their player.
And three different reporters from different organizations who were all right there were like, yeah, no, I was there. This is absolutely what happened. And this is like incident number three for the Astros PR department, who barred a reporter. I mean, they brought a security guard over. I mean, they're nuts. They're like, you know.
So this leadership training isn't just about the players. It is about the executives and the people.
Well, maybe
in charge
it should
as well.
Be. I mean, just seeing the contrast and remembering that, look, domestic violence is still this giant problem in the country. And while you can, you know, throw up your hands in defeat and say, oh, there's nothing you can do. No, there is. There's quite a bit that we can still do. And it starts by having these conversations with high school kids or maybe even middle school kids and helping them to understand the way to treat people. So again, text coach to 710-710. We'd love to have you or your team be on board for the next training session, which will be coming up here in a couple of months at T-Mobile Park. I was thinking a lot about the Mariners as I'm watching these playoffs, and I don't know who I'm, you know, this whole World Series thing has kind of got me betwixt and between, because I've been rooting for the Astros and then this Taubman. I don't know. I may still root for them just because I like George Springer so much and so many of the guys on that team. Mm-hmm. But as you're watching, the Mariners need starting pitching.
You think?
Yes. Like a lot. Like there should be no other goals.
It's really amazing. We talk about young stars. We talk about the shift. We talk about defensive metrics. We talk about hitting. We talk about home run. Oh, we talk about bullpens all the time. And then time and time and time again, what does it come down to? It comes down to, just like the NFL, do you have the elite franchise quarterback when it matters in the playoffs, in the second half, in the fourth quarter, in the playoffs, in the marquee drives?
Garrett Cole, Justin Verlander, Steven Strasburg, Max Scherzer.
Zach Greinke, Patrick Corbin.
Like this... There doesn't need to be any more conversation, right?
You say Kikuchi, Marco Gonzalez, Wade LeBlanc.
Right. I mean, we can talk about George Springer and Anthony Rendon and Carlos Correa, and those guys absolutely factor in, and you've got to have some players on your team. But why are these two teams playing in the World Series? Those four, or maybe say six guys, that more than any other reason, don't you have to point at that? This game at its core is still about having great starting pitching.
It is, and it's interesting to look at the acquisition of those, let's just call it those six guys right there that you referenced. They're all different, right? Because of the strength of Houston, their whole organization, the way they took it all the way down to the studs and could build it up, they then can go out through trade.
They traded for all three of those guys.
They sure did, and acquired all three of those guys because of the assets they have on hand, right? They could trade for all three of those guys. Was Scherzer homegrown? Strasburg was homegrown.
Scherzer's right? Not, no.
They signed earlier in his.
They signed Scherzer.
And Strasburg was homegrown. He was developed.
The number one overall pick. And Corbin, they spent a lot of money on.
Yep. So five of the six, right, come from outside, are not homegrown, don't just have to draft and develop. It'd be great if Gilbert can be Max.
In five of those six cases, money played a pretty significant factor also. I mean, three of them were trades, but money factored in. They were willing to pay when when Pittsburgh wasn't willing to pay Garrett Cole, Houston stepped up and said, yeah, we will. When Detroit was fading out and said, we'll pay for just a year of Verlander.
When is able to absorb Greinke's contract.
That's right. Yep, we'll take it. We'll deal with the price because we've been pretty smart. And once they built it up the first time, they're able to take on some of those chances because you've got more gate, because you've got more revenue streams coming into your team. You can afford to take some of those chances.
So do you prime the pump and you pay Garrett Cole $300 million?
I don't think you do. I don't think that's the answer, is just spending willy-nilly right now. I think that what you need to be doing is acquiring. I mean, I like the acquisition phase of it, trying to acquire some of those guys in trade, and then eventually in the next year or two, finding those up.
And your entire system right now, and how do you this is right up your wheelhouse, right? Because you and Shan are going to be sitting on the couch making some videos in the months ahead leading into spring training next year. In your entire organization, in any single level right now, do you have one player with the ceiling of those six?
Ooh, it's really hard to
pitcher?
Say.
Yes.
Logan Gilbert and George Kirby, they think potentially could be fringe number one, number two, and then obviously things can change once they get up, but they think they're legitimate top-of-the-rotation talents. And Logan Gilbert may potentially be here next year. That said, do they have Steven Strasburg, the next one who you know for sure is going to be one of the five best pitchers in baseball? No. There's like four of those in baseball.
Strasburg was a number one overall pick. Garrett Cole was a number one overall pick. I mean, we've gone through some of these exercises in the past of trying to determine whether or not top picks matter, and sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. Well, in that case, those two guys were both number one overall picks.
And Logan was a first-round pick.
By the way, in both of those years, the Mariners picked second.
Beautiful.
In both of those years, the Mariners picked second. That's one of them, they got Dustin Ackley, and in the other one, they got Danny Hulson.
Are you confident that they would have taken those two guys?
I know they would have taken Garrett Cole, for a fact. And I know, yes, I'm actually confident. Knowing, talking to these scouts and people that were available, yes.
Okay, good.
They would have taken both of those guys had they lost a few more games. And we talk about this in general. Like, you know, oh, well, does it really matter? Do I really want to lose? Well, yes. Yes, you do. You want to lose once your team is bad in order to get a better draft pick. Does it matter? Yes. It would be better to have Garrett Cole than Danny Hulson. Now, that one's unfortunate. I mean, we never know what Hulson could have been if he hadn't blown out his shoulder.
We might find out because he's still with the Cubs.
Yeah, but it's not the same thing that it would have been if he hadn't gone through all of what he's been through. And unfortunately, you know, they had to sweep the A's, so we end up with Dustin Ackley here instead of Steven Strasburg, which is one of the great shames.
So do they have any opportunity this offseason to add a significant arm? Is there anybody in
I
the
think
free...
if they do, it's going to have to be in trade. I think it's going to be by trading for a young player. That's
not a
bona fide
major leaguer.
I don't think so.
Well, they have plenty of opportunity. The real question is, should they do that? I mean, what you have to give up to get a top-level starting pitcher would be immense, and you don't have the depth right now to be able to trade that away and be confident that your player base is good.
I would tend to agree with that. I think what you're looking to do is acquire huge upside, but with high risk in the minor leagues. Does that make sense?
So you don't have to give Kyle Lewis. So you don't have to give
I don't mind
one
giving up. No, you probably still have to give up a Kyle Lewis, who's sort of the same thing. He's got a lot of risk and all that. But if you ask me today, would I trade Kyle Lewis for a high risk, huge upside starting pitcher who's in the minor leagues? The easy answer to me without thinking twice is yes. Of course I do. Of course I do. And I loved what we saw from Kyle Lewis at the end of last year. He's got great potential, and I root like heck for that kid. I really like him. But yeah, you need high-impact talent at starting pitcher. And if you have a chance to go acquire that, even if it's at a risk, I think you've got to take that.
I think the challenge, and you're going to see this, and we saw a little bit last year, is how many Mets organizations are there out there? How many poorly run organizations are there out there where you can actually poach that kind of guy? Because how many of them are watching the same thing we're watching when it all boils down to it and going, yep, sorry. Yep, we're going to need to keep this guy, right? We're going to need to keep our Logan Gilbert. We're going to need to keep our high upside pitcher no matter what you're willing to throw
at us. What do you know, man? You got booed off the field by mean tweets all over the place.
I'm not taking
anything you say
Buckeye
seriously.
Buckeye Nation stepped up.
Well, we've been wrapping up the podcast with old favorites so far. We've done Answer the Question Jerk a couple times. Last week it was Which is Better. But Brock, after you went to Chicago to see Ohio State, by the way, got bumped. That was kind of sad.
Yeah.
Seeing you on the Big Ten Network.
Did you see Mike him flags. On the Big Ten Network?
No, I was watching CJ Cup,
say, you
obviously.
Saw what?
Did I get paid
Friday
for that
night?
Work?
I was watching CJ Cup golf until 11 p.m., dude. What do you think I was
Salk's
doing?
Lying in bed by himself watching Korean golf.
That's true.
Dude,
it was. It's PGA golf in Korea. But yeah, Justin Thomas, have you noticed this new trend, Brock? These guys are wearing hoodies.
No.
They're wearing hoodies on the golf course.
They're not in the PGA Tour.
Yes, they are. I saw Justin Thomas do it and some other guy do it. I don't even know what to make of the whole thing. It's very, very strange.
Whoa.
But while I was watching the CJ Cup, you were calling Northwestern and Ohio State.
Yes.
And I guess some of them had a little problem with you.
Brock Heward looks like an out-of-work Amish actor with explosive diarrhea.
Whoa. Hold on. That is the that's the worst thing anyone's ever said
about
you.
I'm going to have to send that to Wischusen and Zeroli and those guys.
That's...
because we've kept an all-timer. That might be up there.
That's definitely the meanest one I've heard. Who was that from? Just an Ohio State fan?
Out-of-work Amish what? Star?
I'll tell you what.
Movie star.
G better hope his kid performs up to his expected level, or that's the level of vitriol that's coming
around.
For
him. Oh, there's some good ones.
Brock Heward was horrid to listen to. The whole first quarter, he talked about Northwestern's defense. He is just bad. Thank God we won't have him again.
All I know is I... I might have him with Maryland. All I know is bless the heart of any announcer if the Buckeyes like struggle or lose. Well, I think the majority of these were all in the first 15 minutes in the first quarter when it was 7-3.
Maryland still has a football team? I thought they gave up.
They do, the Terrapins.
They didn't give up?
4 minutes left in a 49-point game, and Brock Huard is giving the injury history on a second-string linebacker. That's impressive.
Oh. Well, that's not a mean tweet.
That's nice.
Well, that's nice.
Very nice. What else are you supposed to do?
I like Brock Huard. I do. Did he do any research before this game? He's gotten names wrong all night and forgot about Jonathan Taylor being the top running back in college football.
Right. You know, Brock, it makes no sense. Why wouldn't you do more research now? You don't have this radio show to do every day. It's sad that you're not using that time to do research. What are you using? Just extra time in the tub?
I took two tubs yesterday.
Two?
I did, yeah.
A double tub?
A double tub, yes.
You need a regular full-time job.
Is that a morning tub?
It was a late morning tub after a workout, and then my back was hurting so bad last night.
Epsom salt?
Why don't you just get a hot tub?
Too much work.
What do you mean too much work?
Really? Too much. Oh, yeah.
But you could use it.
I've had one. Remember, I had one.
Yeah, but now you don't have anything to do.
Too much work.
I know you'll never have a
pool. Balance the chemicals. You got to do all that. No.
What else do you have to do?
Study.
Brock, you need a hobby.
Brock Huard's smugness is like nails on a chalkboard.
That's true. I would agree with that.
Super smug.
Super smug Brock's tough to take.
Brock Huard talks too much without saying anything worthwhile. Wish I could sync up with Paul Keels.
A lot of Paul Keels tweets, by the way.
He the radio guy?
Lots of people asking for Paul Keels.
Huard equals Captain Obvious. If I hear Brock Huard say man-to-man coverage one more time.
Why do they get so mad about that?
A lot of people saying that you were just going way too hard on covering man-to-man coverage.
Man-to-man.
You trying to be like Tony Romo?
Man-to-man.
Tony does that.
For the love of God, Brock, please stop talking.
That is probably the most common complaint you get.
Oh, for sure.
Far and away.
For sure.
It's funny because you don't do that on this show. I'm the one who does too much talking. It's like you get away from me and you feel like you've got it, like all this stuff
true.
To say.
Why isn't anybody saying anything?
When Brock Huard starts calling an Ohio State defensive back a condor, we've gone too far and need a backup broadcasting crew. That's a junior level broadcaster who thinks he has the freedom to be super creative, and it ruins his credibility.
What analysis. Wow.
You're a backup broadcasting crew.
Never thought I'd say Brock Huard was a better quarterback than anything he did after football.
Aww.
I stand corrected.
Aww. That's not nice.
That hurts.
Yeah, that one's mean.
Is Brock Huard the worst color commentator in the country?
There's some pretty bad ones out there. By the way,
I just watched Rondé Barber call a game.
Dick Stockton was calling a game this weekend.
Yeah.
And we were in the booth, and Tyler's next to me. She goes, "Whoa, who is that?" I was like, "Oh, it's Dick Stockton." He's like, "What's wrong with him?" Like, no, I think he's okay. He's just old.
Bless his heart, at 88, he's still doing this, man.
He sounds great.
Seriously.
Analysis not quite as good.
His voice is still
mine. How long did Bob Robb do it? Bob Robb went to...
Bob Robertson calling the Cougars.
Went to mid-80s?
Until he was in his upper 80s.
Incredible.
Is that it?
Oh, sure. Let's give them Brock Huard and a camera angle.
What?
Brock Huard is the Walmart version of Kirk Herbstreit.
That's true.
Whoa. Whoa.
That's true.
Right.
Whoa.
The lower prices every day.
Whose side are you on?
But that is true. Aren't you sort of knockoff Kirk Herbstreit?
That hurts,
come on, man. Your tan's not quite as tan.
You worshipped Herbstreit for years.
That really
Brock
hurts.
Huard looks like Chunk from the Goodies grew up and got a lot uglier. Hashtag sorry. Hashtag boy oi oi.
Wait, what? What is hashtag?
Play that one again.
Boy, oy, oy.
I don't really know that hashtag. Is that a common one?
Hashtag boy oi oi.
All right. Well, there you go. Like Chunk. We just watched Goonies recently with the kids, so we were looking up.
Was it still appropriate?
Yeah.
It was. Oh, good.
I mean, they dropped some words that you probably wouldn't generally say around kids now, but yeah. It's still good. Avery loves it. But yeah.
Because as we know, we go back to a lot of those 80s movies.
Chunk grew up to be like a lawyer. He's like an entertainment lawyer. Oh, so great. I really feel like you made out okay.
It's not so it has been nice having
weird theme of 80s movies, by the way, is guys getting hit where you don't want to get hit and then talking in a high voice. Mm-hmm. That's like a weird 80s trope that would happen in like every comedy. What's the deal with that?
What were you about to say,
Kyle? I was saying thank you to Paul Gallant for, on my drive-in, he's like talking about Netflix and Mindhunter. Mm. I'm like, oh, usually we just hear about Young Guns and Wildcats.
All right, but Goonies is for the kids.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you, Paul.
This is why
Top Gun reference.
This
great.
Is why we're doing the more modern podcast instead of the old school radio.
We're just a podcast gateway for old people.
Are we done here? Are we done now?
I think we are. Hope what was this, episode 4 of the podcast? Are we going to keep counting this out?
I was wondering, is this like Salk's 25 most intriguing countdown? How long will he go counting the podcast?
Just probably till 4. We'll see you next week, guys. Goodbye.
Days in the barn.
Days in the barn. Sure.
Days in the chopper!